Hello and welcome to the only Shrek 5 fan cast on the web. It's the... Oh, I couldn't stop.
Excellent, excellent. It's been a couple weeks since we've done a Shrek 5 joke, so I'm glad you did that.
It is. I had to bring it back just for you. I'm Mike DiCriscio, and joining me as always is the man who I'll still love even if he turns out to be an ogre.
It's Mike Smith.
Hey, welcome everybody. As you can tell, we're switching it up. Normally, the other Mike is the better host.
The better host, the one who introduces things, not necessarily the better host.
Yeah, normally it's you.
But you get to wear the host hat today, which is fun.
It's exciting. It's a change things up. We'll do it once a year. So it's that time of year again for New York Comic Con.
Yes. So we did this last year where I went to Comic Con and you did not. So you talked to me about being at Comic Con, and that's our podcast.
Yeah, so spoiler alert, that's what we're going to do again.
Yep.
Typically, we do film news, discussions, and then a feature review, but we want to get all the news out there for you, so we're going to do 4 days worth of Comic-Con in maybe an hour and a half. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But I was at Comic-Con this year, and it was great. It was a lot of fun. It was exhausting. I feel like I was stretched way more thin this year than I usually am, and I'm usually stretched like pretty thin at Comic-Con, but I feel like this year especially there was so much going on. Like, there was so much going on the show floor, they expanded it.
They had room to expand more stuff.
Well, here's the thing, last year I was talking about the different stages of Comic-Con. It's the main stage and there was the Empire stage. The Empire stage was gone this year.
Okay.
The Empire Stage was the second biggest stage at the Javits Center, and they took it away. They might have renovated the Javits Center. I'm not really sure how it worked. But instead, in its place was a place that was labeled the Experience Zone, in which a lot of different places had set up virtual reality booths or video game demos or mystery box stuff kind of thing.
Right.
So there was a lot of different stuff there. I'll get to one of them in a little bit, but there's a lot of really interesting stuff there. Amazon had set up the Man in the High Castle virtual reality experience, which I don't know what that would be like.
It's probably just a glimpse into maybe November. That's all it is. It's just a calendar flipping to November.
That's good. Well done.
Thanks.
So there was that. I imagine it's some kind of game, but I feel like it's just you walking around the Man in the High Castle world. But I don't know that much about the show. Maybe it's a shoot 'em up.
I don't know. Yeah, I feel like that's the potential future for VR. Unfortunately, rather than being an awesome gaming experience, it's just a bunch of tech demos.
But I will be talking about a very awesome gaming experience that VR has to offer in a little bit. So there's that at least to look forward to. And there was a Rick and Morty VR game that I actually tried to go to, but every time I went, it was like a 4-hour line. To get on there. That was like right near the Adult Swim booth, and they had a bunch of stuff there. A lot of stuff on the show floor. I was packed. I feel like it was even more congested than usual, even though there was more space on the show floor.
Right.
I just felt like there was a ton of people there. A lot of people dressed up as costume, as well, as always. But a lot of the big panels this year were actually not at the Javits Center. The Javits Center is where the hub of Comic-Con is, but I feel like many of the big panels were outsourced this year. So... Right. A lot of the big ones were either the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is a couple blocks away, or Madison Square Garden, which is also a few blocks away. And so some panels that I didn't get to go to, but were held elsewhere. There was a panel for Legion, the new FX series based on X-Men comics, that I've heard pretty good things out of that panel. I didn't get to go to Iron Fist, which was held at the main stage in Comic-Con, which I was very upset about after hearing what happened at the Iron Fist panel.
Right.
For those unfamiliar, Sigourney Weaver came out and was announced as the villain of the Defenders at that Iron Fist panel, which that would have been crazy to see.
Yeah.
I missed there was a big War for the Planet of the Apes panel where they showed, I think, 7 minutes of the movie. And there was a big discussion with Andy Serkis about the making of the movie and Matt Reeves about the making of the movie. There was two separate War for the Planet of the Apes panels at Madison Square. One was at Madison Square Garden. One was at a Regal Theater. That screened the 7 minutes, and it was like a live Q&A. I didn't get to go to either of those, but I did get to see a lot of really cool panels. Stuff, it's always like there's always stuff I wish I could have seen, but at the same time, like, I'm happy with the stuff that I did get to see because I did get to see a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah, it would be impossible to see all of the things at Comic-Con.
Exactly. So you got to pick your battles here.
Let's also take a second and applaud or whatever you want to do for the fact that Comic-Con happens partly at Madison Square Garden now. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. And there was a lot of stuff in Madison Square Garden. Like, I remember, I think last year, The Walking Dead had a panel in Madison Square Garden. And there might have been, like, one or two other Madison Square Garden panels, but otherwise, like, it was kind of bare. This year, they had panels all weekend at Madison Square Garden. And especially, I was there all day Saturday just to get into The Walking Dead panel. But there were other panels there, too, that I was pretty eager to see. So I'll be talking about that in a little bit, too. But I guess let's start from the beginning, Mike. Let's start from the humble let's start from the humble beginnings.
Day one, New York Comic Con. First panel, I assume, I believe the first panel you attended is Ash vs. the Evil Dead, right?
This is correct, yes. So I went to the Ash vs. Evil Dead panel last year, and I'll get this out of the way. I'm a massive Evil Dead fan, as are you, I know.
Something very close to both our hearts.
Yeah, I love that movie series to its core, and I love the Ash vs. Evil Dead series. I'm a big fan of Season 1. I actually just bought it on Blu-ray.
Oh, look at that. For those listening at home, he's holding up the Blu-ray.
Yeah. For those who want a visual representation of the thing that they cannot see me visualize, that's what this is.
Playing film book cast bingo. He has the Blu-ray.
So I'm a big fan of the Ash vs. Evil Dead. And I think it's a great continuation of one of cinema's great characters. But there was like no way that this panel could top last year's panel, which was moderated by Kevin Smith, featured Sam Raimi, and it surprised the audience by screening the very first episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead before anyone else had seen it. Right. Like, that was not pre-announced before the panel started. That was just, like, it was a big surprise. Like, oh, and hey, we're going to show you the first episode. The entire audience went nuts. It was crazy. But this was a lot of fun, too. This panel was moderated by Doug Benson, who's a comedian who podcast fans will know from Doug Loves Movies. You know, and so that was pretty cool. I was pretty excited to see him. And it featured the whole cast of the show: Bruce Campbell, Lucy Lawless, Ray Santiago, Dana DeLorenzo, and newcomers to the season: Michelle Hurd, $6 Million Man Lee Majors, and Evil Dead veteran Ted Raimi was also there.
Very nice.
Yeah. So as always, like, Bruce Campbell dominated the show.
Yeah, no one can top him.
Yeah. But everyone else in the cast was given their moment to shine. The audience Q&A. Had bits like, you know, Ted Raimi impersonating Lee Majors, Lee Majors impersonating Ted Raimi. And, you know, there were bits where, like, somebody would say a compliment to Bruce Campbell, like, during the Q&A, and Bruce Campbell would walk up to them with $10 and give it to them. And that happened a couple times.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, you know, the panel was fairly light. Like, there wasn't that much new to report. The cast wouldn't say anything certain about a potential season 3, although I think a day or two later after the panel, it was announced that the show was picked up for season 3. So there you go. Cool news.
That's along the same lines of Comic-Cons at Madison Square Garden, who thought we would get 3 seasons of an Evil Dead TV show?
Right. Like,
we're living in the future, people.
The future is now. Yeah. We are not in the Snyderverse anymore. I mean, we might be, but this is a lighter corner of the Snyderverse.
Yeah, exactly. A ray of hope.
it was also implied that time travel may have played a role this season, akin to Army of Darkness. They didn't really address this in the panel, but I think they are allowed to reference Army of Darkness now.
Really?
In the show, because I remember the first season, like, they didn't have the rights to reference Army of Darkness, so there's bits where they reference the first two Evil Dead movies, but they don't really talk about Army of Darkness much. So it kind of just sounds like, you know, the stuff in the cabin happened, and then, you know, he didn't travel back in time and you know, save an entire village or whatever. So in the first episode of the season, there's actually a bit where they open the Necronomicon and you see the image from Army of Darkness of like Bruce Campbell in the 1400s, like with his bow stick held high.
Yep.
So that was kind of like a cool Easter egg, but it didn't like it wasn't like an explicit reference. It was just like a picture, which I'm pretty sure it's a picture that's also in Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
And there's also actually talk about the Evil Dead remake. A fan asked if there would ever be a sequel to that movie, and Bruce Campbell would not say anything definitive on that subject. He did say, however, that since director Fede Alvarez recently found great success with Don't Breathe, which got massive applause from the audience when he mentioned that, he probably doesn't need an Evil Dead remake anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I guess it's up in the air at this point. But after that question, they stressed, like, you know, the remake was cool and stuff. We enjoyed doing it. But we're so happy that this show kind of brought the original back, and people have responded to it so well. And it's an awesome show. Like it's so good. And this panel was packed. I mean, I got there. This panel was at 11 o'clock, and I expected to be able to show up. I got off the train at like 8:30 and got into the city. I expected to be able to show up around like 9, and walk around the Javits Center for a little bit, you know, hang out, you know, see the sights and stuff. But I walked past the Hammerstein Ballroom as I was on my way to the Javits Center, and the line was already like down the street.
Got lucky.
Yeah, they had like barricades up for like 3 sections of the street, and so I was like, maybe I should just get online now. So I ended up waiting online for like 2 hours to get into the Astro Seal Dead panel. That's what this weekend was. It was a lot of waiting online, more so than previous Comic Cons. I feel like I did a lot more waiting online and just hanging out with nerds than I ever did before, which is fun. You meet a lot of fun people doing that.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Yeah. So after the Q&A at this panel, the audience was shown the new episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead, which is Season 2, Episode 2, which aired last night on Sunday. We're recording this on Monday, so it was last night on Sunday, October 9th. I'm assuming you haven't seen it. I don't think you finished Season 1 of Ash vs. Evil Dead, right?
Yeah, the unfortunate thing for me is that the show's on Stars, which is a channel I don't have a subscription to. So it's a little harder for me to get episodes. So I just never got around to finishing Season 1.
Okay.
So maybe one day I will.
Yeah, if you can get around to it, it's very much worth it. And I won't give too much away to your spoilers. I will say that it is a fairly standard, if very enjoyable, episode of the show, with one sequence that is completely insane.
I feel like that's a description for most of the show. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a pretty average episode until it's not.
Yeah, it was intense. It was really crazy that they went there. Let's just say it involves full frontal nudity of a corpse.
Sure. Of course it does.
A corpse that happens to be like a deadite. It's a deadite that's attacking Bruce Campbell with its intestines. The asshole gets involved.
Wow.
In some capacity. If Evil Dead is little more than a vehicle to see Bruce Campbell get beaten up in embarrassing ways, then this episode delivers big time.
Yeah. The undead Three Stooges, basically.
Yeah. It's a very enjoyable episode to end what was a very enjoyable panel. And again, I mean, the episode has a lot of great stuff for the rest of the cast, too. I think Dana DiLorenzo is killing it on the show. I think she's basically as fun to watch as Bruce Campbell, which is high praise.
Right, so let's move on to the next thing. I don't know what order they happened in, but
right. So the next thing was I went back to the Javits Center, and I had a lot of time to kill between the panel that I had to go to next, which was Archer. So I walked around the show floor for a little bit, and I went to the experience zone.
Right.
And I was walking around. I saw the Man in the High Castle thing. I saw New York Haunted Hayride had some kind of VR thing going on. Square Enix had a booth set up with people playing Final Fantasy 15. Which is coming out in November. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, but, that's awesome.
The thing that really drew my eye is a game that I didn't know existed until I saw it. It's called John Wick Chronicles.
Sign me up already. You don't even need to tell me.
It is a virtual reality John Wick game. The line for this was about 2 hours long. I decided to wait on it because I had a lot of time to kill. And we're both big fans of John Wick. Right, we are both. I think we saw the movie together actually when we were in theaters. John Wick is awesome. Love that movie. And since I had some time, I came across this game. And I'll admit to not being as big into video games as I used to be. Like I used to play video games a lot more often. I still play games occasionally. I still play as much as I can, but my focus is more on movies and TV now. So I had never tried virtual reality before. I had never done anything like that. But I love John Wick with the passion. I figured this game is as good a time as any to try it out for the first time.
Yeah. If you're going to try it, it's with this.
Yeah. Have you done a virtual reality game at all before, Mike?
No, I have not. Unfortunately, virtual reality right now is still really expensive.
Yes.
As far as like consumer products go. So for the most part, I haven't been at a convention or anything that has it, so I've never tried it.
Yeah, fair enough. Guys, when I tell you, this was possibly the most immersive gaming experience of my life. I hope that you believe me. Like, for 10 minutes, I was John Wick. I felt like John Wick. As soon as the game demo starts you off in the Continental Hotel lobby, and it starts off and it's like, oh, good evening, Mr. Wick, and like there's this like notification and like somebody starts shooting at you, and then you go up an elevator and then you're on a rooftop and you're taking out these guys. So you fight a series of enemies and then a large helicopter shows by and you have to try to take that down. You know, the VR mask is laid over your eyes and the headphones are going over your ears and you're given these like two, not joysticks, but like, sort of gun handles, like,
right.
Control your guns with, the entire world is drowned out around you. Like I was watching people play this game and I was seeing them move around and get like ducking and stuff. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to do that.
Yeah, like, I'm cooler than those people.
Like, but like, I'm not one to be running around in public playing a video game. Like, that's just not me.
Right.
But as soon as those, you know, glasses go on and like your headphones go on and all you can see and hear is the game, you know, I got into it. Like, I was like ducking and running. I almost broke the game a couple times, I think, because there's points where like. They give you a little space to walk around in, but like it wasn't a huge space. And
right.
When you're playing the game, like if you go too far out, if you physically walk too far out of the thing, like a thing will stop you from going any further in the game. Like a blue screen will show up, and that happened a couple times while I was playing because I was just so immersed in the experience. Like I felt like I was actually running and stuff. It was insane. Like this. So I don't know if it was just because I have not played VR before and this is a new experience for me, or if it's just because this is a really well-made game. It might be a combination of the two. But I was incredibly impressed by John Wick. I really felt like this was a really fantastic game. Anybody who is checking out VR should probably do so.
Yeah, that's exciting. I'm super jealous because VR is a thing I've wanted to try and to do. So to be able to do that for the first time with John Wick, that's the perfect combination of things.
Yeah, it was pretty insane.
So you get to be John Wick for 10 minutes, and then you head on into Archer.
And then I had to resume my normal life, which could not possibly measure up to...
You had to stop killing people and go into the Archer panel.
Yeah, well, I had to show up to the Archer panel very early. My friend was at the Archer was also at the Hammerstein Ballroom, where Ash vs. Evil Dead was. And I had to show up to the Archer panel pretty early. My friend was hanging out there at the Hammerstein Ballroom for a while, and she was texting me. She was at the... panel with Robert Kirkman with The Walking Dead, and she was like, yeah, it's pretty packed in here, like it's actually like a lot of people are here. And then she was at the panel for the Exorcist TV show, and then she was leaving, but she texted me and was like, I think it's starting to fill up pretty fast, you should get here now for Archer. And I was like, good call. So I ended up seeing the panel before Archer as well, which was the Legends of the Hidden Temple panel.
What year is it? Wait a second.
Yeah, so I did not intend on attending this panel, but since I had to show up early for Archer, I might as well talk about it. If you're unfamiliar, Legends of the Hidden Temple was a game show on Nickelodeon in the 1990s, and it's now being adapted into a movie for the network that's airing this Thanksgiving. So there's going to be a TV movie of Legends of the Hidden Temple that's airing next month.
That seems odd, since it was a game show.
Right, but it's also like if you think about it, it's a game show that kind of had a storyline. Like I didn't really watch Legend of the Hidden Temple when I was a kid. Like it was on in the background a lot of the time, but it just wasn't something I watched that much. But like I know people who are nuts about it. So the kids cast for this movie were here. It's like a trio of kids, like between like 12 and 14 years old. The original host of the show, Kirk Fogg, was there, and voice actor D. Bradley Baker was also there, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome
because he is the voice of Olmec on the show. He also narrated the show. And he returns to voice Olmec in the movie. It seemed like a pretty fun panel for fans. You know, I felt like I was in the highest ratio of millennials,
right,
in the entire world at that point. Like it was just people, like people with like stunted childhoods who never grew up,
who can't go anywhere.
Which, to be fair, is what Comic-Con is. And it spent most of its time at a Q&A. There was a brief trailer for the new movie, which was shown towards the end as well. And it looks kind of like a Night at the Museum knockoff, like you know, like a kid's version of Indiana Jones almost.
I mean, that's literally what the game show was.
Exactly. The highlight here was Dee Bradley Baker, who was asked many questions about his other work. So over the course of the hour, he performed the voices for Olmec, Appa from Avatar The Last Airbender, Number 4 from Codename Kids Next Door, and Klaus from American Dead.
Yeah. He's a very prolific voice actor.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. He was doing those voices and stuff. And it was also announced, the president of Nickelodeon was also there on the panel. And it was also announced that in addition to Legends of the Hidden Temple, it had been previously announced that Hank Arnold and Rocko's Modern Life are coming back in some capacity as well.
Right.
And Nickelodeon is also bringing back Double Dare for an anniversary special.
What?
With the possibility of more in the future. So it's a good time to be a 90s kid on Nickelodeon for sure.
Yeah,
I think they very much tapped into the BuzzFeed market.
Yeah, they want them millennial dollars now, like you said.
Yeah, actually, the panel was moderated by somebody who works for BuzzFeed, so it was.
Yeah. God damn it!
You know, branding is on point.
They are.
I've heard them talking about bringing back Rugrats too. Like, I feel like they're just going through their entire 90s library and figuring out, you know, what they can bring back. I SpongeBob is still making episodes.
Yeah, and so it's just like Fox is making a TV show out of every movie they've ever made, apparently.
Right, this year they got like The Exorcist and The Weapon and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this seems like it's going to be more successful. I feel like the 90s kid market is a much more lucrative market than people who remember old movies.
Yeah, we haven't been fully drained of our nostalgia yet, so we'll show up and pay for stuff.
Oh yeah, but we will be. We will be drained.
Just give it a matter of time. So you get to watch Dee Bradley Baker do a bunch of whole cool voices, Legends of the Hidden Temple, and then
the
long-awaited Archer panel begins.
The long-awaited Archer panel. And this is a panel I've always wanted to go to and never got the chance. Archer has a panel at New York Comic Con pretty much every year, I think. And so I have never had the opportunity to go to this panel, so I was pretty psyched to get into this. So we're both big fans of Archer, right? I feel like every time I start a thing, I'm like, we're both big fans of this thing.
You could probably just safely assume we're both big fans of everything.
Fans of the FX animated series Archer know that the cast is one of the sharpest on TV. And so seeing them in a room together was a lot of fun. Now, this panel consisted of H. John Benjamin, who plays Archer, Aisha Tyler, who plays Lana, Jessica Walter, who plays Mallory, Chris Parnell, who plays Cyril, Amber Nash, who's Pam, and Lucky Yates, who's Krieger. Notable absence, Judy Greer was not there, nor was series creator Adam Reed. He was absent this time around.
Very interesting.
It was very odd, I thought. Especially, I think on the app it said that Judy Greer and Adam Reed would be there. But Matt Thompson, who's another producer of the show, was also there, and somebody who works at FX was also there as well. And much of the panel was focused on the show's upcoming 8th season, which looks to be a huge departure for the series. So I don't know, did you hear anything about this at all, Mike, this 8th season?
Yeah, I've heard what the theme is, I guess, is a way to put it without spoiling anything.
Well,
I'm
going to talk about it. I don't know if this was announced before Comic-Con.
No, pretty sure this was the announcement.
Okay. Yeah, this is entirely news to me. This season is going to take place entirely in 1947, and it will be a hard-boiled detective noir story.
Okay, pause. If there's ever a thing that was made for me,
it's Archer Noir.
Yes. Yeah. Like, come on. It's out of control.
Yeah. No, that's true. So that sounds really exciting. The show has taken to reinventing itself every once in a while. I think season 5, Archer Vice, is my personal favorite season of the show. I think that season is fantastic. This idea has a lot of potential. It also appears to be ignoring the cliffhanger that happened at the end of season 7. I don't know. You catch up a little bit later, right? You watch them on Netflix.
Yeah, I haven't seen season 7 yet.
Okay, season 7 ends on a pretty major cliffhanger that I won't spoil. But it seems like it's going to save that for a later date, potentially season 9. This seems like it's just going to be like an alternate universe thing. Like, oh yeah, we're just going to do a season 1947.
Yeah. From what I had heard is that they just want to give up on trying to do that kind of like... They want to just keep making Archer Vice and doing different themes every season, apparently.
Yeah.
Or at least for this season.
Yeah.
They also announced that, I think they had announced it prior to Comic-Con, that season 10 will be the final season of the show.
Yes, they did mention that a couple of days beforehand, they did like Adam Reed announced that season 10 would be the last one. He's got a few ideas for seasons left, and then he feels like he's done. They actually, somebody asked that in the audience Q&A, like, why would you ruin my Comic-Con by announcing that Archer is ending in season 10? To which the guy who works at FX kind of deflected it and was like, yeah, well, we're not exactly sure what's going on yet. You know, we're renewed through the show's renewed through season 10. It's really dependent on what Adam wants to do and stuff. So they kind of backtracked on it a little bit.
Right.
But it's, I mean, it sounds like, season 10 is like 10 seasons is a phenomenal run for the show.
Yeah.
And if Adam Reed feels like, you know, he's done creatively at that point, then I'm fine with letting it go. People went nuts about it, though. Like, I know people who were like, I can't believe Archer's ending. And it's like, yeah, it's ending in 3 years. Like, calm down.
It's insane that a show like Archer will last 10 seasons.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. Everything else Adam Reed has done has lasted, like, a season. Like,
right.
You know, C-Lab and Frisky Dingo and stuff. Like, really, like, like cults, like, animated shows that aired on, like, Adult Swim and stuff. Like,
yeah.
You know, Archer has been, like, creatively, like, pretty great for, like, a really long time. I don't think it's a... there have been seasons where it feels like it's a little bit off. I remember, I think season 4 felt like it was growing a little tired, and then they reinvented itself with Archer Vice. And so that was really cool. And then season 6 was kind of like a return to the spy thing. And it felt kind of reinvigorated because they spent the time doing Archer Vice. And then season 7 was like this, kind of Hollywood mystery thing. They moved it to LA and there was this whole thing. But one thing that I found really interesting about this season 8 announcement that it's going to take place in 1947 is that the entire show has this kind of like very loose timeline.
Yeah, it's very anachronistic. Nothing takes place in the same time ever.
Yeah. To the point where they joke about it on the show. But they make jokes about like, oh, what year is it? Archer's like, seriously? Like,
yeah.
So this one is going to be 1947. It's going to be period specific to 1947. Like, there's not going to be anything, like they said, there's not going to be anything in 1940 from 1948 in this season.
Right.
Being very specific about what they're doing here. Other confirmations include the return of Barry, Len Trexler, and Babu the Ocelot. yeah. And every character will be sort of like alternate versions of themselves this season. So Archer and Cyril are going to be like dueling private detectives. Okay. Pam is only referred to as Poovy in this season. She also might be a man. She's kind of like, I think she's like Cyril's muscle.
Oh my God.
Krieger is a bartender, possibly one with ties to Nazi Germany. Which naturally
really makes sense. Yeah.
Lana is a lounge singer, and Aisha Tyler actually does sing in the role. And Mallory is only referred to as Mother, and she like it's kind of like a code name. She's not biologically Sterling Archer's mother in the season. She's just a code name referred to as Mother. She's kind of like running a whole operation.
Oh my God!
So to put it in language that nerds will understand, Aisha Tyler describes it as "quote unquote" like the new 52.
Oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah,
this is gonna be the best.
So I have full confidence that this show can pull it off, because this show tends to do very well when it just like throws everything out the window and starts something fresh. Like, again, Archer Vice I think is like the best season of the show. I think that's like a really clever, really funny season, and so that's really cool. But other than some promotional stills, we were not shown anything from the new season, any actual clips or anything like that, which I was kind of like, I feel like I think it was last year they showed like the entire premiere episode of something or of season 7 before, like, and that was a few months before the season started. So I thought maybe there would be something here, but there was just some stills, which was fine. And they did announce a new book called The Art of Archer, which features a foreword by Christian Slater, who of course plays Slater on the show. You know, seeing this cast together, just insulting fans during the Q&A and cracking jokes, H. John Benjamin was really funny, and Lucky Yates was fucking amazing. He was hilarious throughout the panel. As expected, Krieger is my favorite character on the show. So I was very excited that Lucky Yates happened to be the funniest one. And he also sounds exactly like Krieger, just him talking.
It's just his normal voice.
Yeah, like everybody else is kind of doing a voice. Like, even, I mean, maybe not H. John Benjamin, but like everyone else.
I was going to say.
Like Amber Nash sounds different than Pam, you know, when she's just speaking. But Lucky Yates just sounds exactly like Krieger. He has like the deep booming voice. He sounds like he should be making robots in the back or something. Like, it was delightful. So that was more than enough to make up for the lack of footage. And this panel was a blast, and it was a perfect way to end day one of Comic-Con.
That's it. The sun sets on the city that never sleeps.
Yep.
And then It rises later, and then you go to day two of
CalCon. And then there was day two. Yeah, so I assumed that day two would be my longest day at Comic-Con. I was wrong. Or maybe not, like, it actually might have been my physically long, like, time-wise. I think I got there, I arrived before the doors opened, so I got there at, like, 8:30. And I left after the floor closed. And in that time, I got to see some cool panels, do some exploring on the floor, and I waited on a lot of lines, like lots and lots and lots of lines. So the first thing I wanted to get into was Stranger Things, which, you know, maybe you're familiar with Stranger Things, Mike. It is kind of a global phenomenon at this point.
I think it's safe to say we're both big fans. Maybe not big fans. The one thing we're not both big fans of.
Yeah, you're a big fan of it. I think it's fine, but yeah. I wanted to get into this panel. Filmbook wanted me to get into it first of all, but also I was just interested to see what this panel was going to be like, because I know the season dropped on Netflix in July, I believe, so it's only been a couple months, and so, you know, season two is very far off in the future. Like sometime next year we're going to get season two. So I was curious what they're going to have to offer here at this Stranger Things panel. I waited online for about 2 hours to get into this as well. And basically this was a critic, Matt Zoller-Seitz, who was moderating the panel, which is pretty cool because I love Matt Zoller-Seitz. And it was the two actors from the show, Millie Bobby Brown, who plays Eleven, was there, and David Harbour, who plays the chief of police, whatever his name is, Hopper. And yeah, I don't think there has been a show that has been as much of an instant cultural phenomenon as Stranger Things, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, nobody really had the show on their radar up until it hit Netflix, and then suddenly, like, it caught on like wildfire. So this time last year, no one at the convention had ever even heard of Stranger Things, and right. Now it's so popular they can hold Stranger Things cosplay contests, which they did while we were waiting for the panel to start.
That's amazing.
So, waiting online for this panel, I was stuck in like a sea of Elevens, Karen Wheelers, and of course Barbs.
Naturally.
There's a lot of Barbs. Yeah, and so it was, again, the biggest confluence. I couldn't bring people down and be like, hey, Stranger Things was just fine. Like,
why would you do that to anyone?
Exactly. So this was the first main stage panel of the day. I knew it would be packed, and it had Millie Bobby Brown and David Harbour. Harbour was a few minutes late for undisclosed reasons, and the panel started without him, though he received thunderous applause when he showed up. Yeah, so if you're looking for news out of the Stranger Things panel, there was none.
No little tidbits about season two or anything, nothing?
Very little. Harbour kind of definitively stated, like, people, they were asked about Barb, naturally, right. And Harbour kind of definitively stated that Barb is very much dead. they did not expect, the reaction to Barb to be so, intense.
Yeah,
one might say. Barb is basically like a meme on Twitter, on social media and stuff. Now, actually, throughout the con, you could see missing posters for Barb.
Oh my god!
all over the Javits Center, which was a nice touch. That was pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
So the next season will deal with a lot of the loose ends from season one, which includes Barb's death or disappearance or whatever it's going to be. Right. And Brown and Harbour also said that they've received the first few scripts of season two, and they are quote unquote insane. So there's that.
Imagine if they said they were bad, though. Like, what else could they say?
Exactly. They also said there will be a lot more of the Nancy, Steve, and Jonathan love triangle. So if you're a fan, of that, you know, there's actually, it was funny to see the audience reaction to that, because I guess the season ends with Nancy and Steve still together, right? That's how it was.
Yeah.
And so people were asked about that. Because, like, I guess there was like a big Jonathan fanboy or something in the audience, and there, and Millie Bobby Brown was like, I don't know, I kind of like that Nancy and Steve got together. They, like, Steve showed that he was a nice guy after all. He bought Jonathan a new camera, and then, like, half the audience started booing, and she was like, oh, well, okay, wow.
That's hilarious.
And it was also implied that Eleven and Hopper could have a rich emotional arc, because it seems like those characters are going to be connected in some way based on where season one ends. But the appeal here wasn't news about next year. These guys were really funny, charismatic actors who bounced off each other. Even as somebody who wasn't a big fan of Stranger Things, I had a really fun time hearing them talk about the process of making season one, talking about their auditions, talking about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff going on. They have very funny, easygoing air, kept it moving. And Brown, who is 12 years old, was surprisingly outgoing and really fun to watch. The exact opposite of every character on the show. and it kind of gave me a greater appreciation of her work on as Eleven on Stranger Things. You know, she's just really funny and outgoing and dynamic, and she had a really fun relationship with Harbor. And so, you know, she's like proclaiming her love for the Vampire Diaries while there. She's talking about playing Pokemon Go with the other kids on the Stranger Things set. Or at some point, she mispronounced Poughkeepsie as Pepsi.
what?
It made it a very worthwhile panel for any Stranger Things fan. And even as somebody who's not a huge fan of Stranger Things, I enjoyed the panel regardless. So there was that.
How about that?
Yeah.
So you walk out of this thing that you were lukewarm on.
I'm still lukewarm on it, but I have a greater appreciation for at least those two actors.
For the craft.
For the craft.
So what's the next panel you hit?
All right. So at that point, I had a lot of time to kill. I was only going to be hitting Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. later on in the day, which was at 7:30 at night. And so I got to the Stranger Things panel at like 12:30, and I was like, what am I going to do for 7 hours? So
get online.
Yeah. Basically, I walked around the show floor for a little bit, saw some like fun stuff there. And then I was like, I got so much time to kill. I might as well go to the Adult Swim panel, which was for three shows that I don't watch. but like, I was at least like – it had a lot of people that I was really – who I really like. So I was like, all right, I might as well check it out. And the Adult Swim panel is also on the main stage. And every year, Adult Swim brings their shows to New York Comic Con to the main stage. Their most popular show, Rick and Morty, was not at this panel. Which
I feel like Rick and Morty is big enough it would get its own panel.
That's true. That's very true. Rick and Morty did not really have a panel there. They did have a lot of representation elsewhere, though. There was, I mentioned the Rick and Morty virtual reality game.
Right.
Which had like a 4-hour wait time to get online to that, which was insane. And there was also this big photo op thing where you can take your picture with Rick in the in like the jail cell from the end of season 2.
Okay.
So you can get into like the cell next to him and like take your picture.
Right.
So they definitely had representation. And like if you looked at the cosplayers, like there's a ton of Rick and Morty's. I saw at least 2 Mr. Poopy Buttholes, which was delightful. So Rick and Morty had its representation here, but it was not present at the panel. It did bring 3 strong contenders, including one with a very fervent fan base, which I'll talk about last. The first show on display was a show called Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell. Have you heard about the show, Mike?
I have not. No, I'm kind of falling out of the Adult Swim loop other than Rick and Morty.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I'm mostly a Rick and Morty guy. I mean, I also like Children's Hospital, which has recently ended as well, and I was a big fan of Too Many Cooks. And the creator of Too Many Cooks makes this show, Casper Kelly. So he was there.
All right.
So that was pretty cool. But anyway, Your Pretty Face Going to Hell is entering its 3rd season on Adult Swim on October 23rd. This show is a dark comedy, a live-action dark comedy, and it's a workplace sitcom that happens to take place in hell with Satan as, like, the asshole boss.
Of course.
And all the demons are, like, employees. So it's a live-action show where all the actors are, like, caked in, like, demon makeup and stuff like that. So we were shown the first episode of the new season in which Satan wants to have a child and accidentally impregnates Gary, one of his employees. It had some very funny moments. I expect it's exactly what fans of the show will want to see.
right.
You know, the panel, there was a panel of Q&A afterwards, which consisted of Dana Snyder, who was also of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Matt Servito of the Cinemax series Banshee, who's also on the show. He's also on The Sopranos as well. Casper Kelly, who's the creator of Too Many Cooks. And Skyping in from Italy, series star Henry Zebrowski. And that was really interesting, because Henry Zebrowski was basically naked while Skyping in.
Of course he was.
He also seemed like he might have been drunk. But, yeah, he was, like it Skyped in, and you could see him, and he was shirtless. And then at one point he like raised his leg and you just saw like this, just his leg.
oh my God.
I think he was wearing underwear. He said he was wearing underwear. I hope he was wearing underwear.
In theory.
but this is a very light, breezy, pretty funny panel. As far as announcements go, they mentioned that this season will feature guest appearances from John Glazer, Andrew Daly, and Dustin Diamond playing himself. So that'll be interesting. And Casper Kelly also announced that he's working on another Too Many Cooks-esque segment to air at 4 a.m. for Adult Swim. And it will be about video games in some capacity. So there is that. So I think I did enjoy the show. I'm not sure if I'll end up watching it at any point, but you know, we'll see what happens. The second show is a new one for Adult Swim. This is a brand new Adult Swim show, also premiering on October 23rd, and it's called Dreamcore LLC. And I had no idea what to expect from the show, but I was pretty impressed by what I saw. We were shown the first two episodes of the series, and I mean, Adult Swim series are 11 minutes long, so it's...
Right, yeah.
You know, so we were shown the first two episodes, and in a nutshell, this is a show about a mad doctor who goes into patients' dreams to fix what's wrong with them. So the parts in the real world are live action, but the parts inside the dream are rotoscoped animation, kind of like Waking Life.
Right.
So it gives the show a very unique look that I don't think any other TV show has at the moment. The first episode is pretty funny, but it's kind of bogged down by having to set up its unique concept. The second episode is a lot stronger, and it features some very funny moments that had the whole room cracking up. The first episode has a guest appearance from Dave Coulier from Full House, which is... pretty entertaining. And then the second episode has a guest appearance from June Squibb, great character actress as well. After the episodes aired, Terry, who is the robot in the series, voiced by Stephen Merchant, rolled onto the stage to introduce the panel. So the actual like physical robot showed up.
Yeah.
And introduced the panel and all the actors and stuff. And so series creator Daniel Sasson came out on stage. Stars of the show John Grease and Nick Rutherford came out, and executive producer John Krasinski, Jim from The Office, came out as well. And then Stephen Merchant himself walked out a few minutes later, which was pretty cool as well. So I'm a big fan of John Krasinski and Stephen Merchant, so that was pretty neat. That level of talent working on the show is a pretty great sign, and they all seemed pretty genuinely engaged and interested in the project. Naturally, John Krasinski and Stephen Merchant got the most questions, because they're the most well-known people there. And they engaged in a playful feud pitting the American office against the British office.
Right.
Merchant did not care because he said he gets paid either way. but yeah, really, really interesting show. I think it's definitely worth checking out. I might pop in on that when that show premieres later this month. The third and final show Adult Swim brought on stage was Venture Brothers, which is a show I know you really like.
Yeah, that's another show. Seems to be the trend, I guess, of things I'm not caught up on. But
yeah, I have never watched Venture Brothers, and I've always kind of wanted to. I've always meant to. So this is a show with a very passionate fan base, but it's not a show that had a panel that had that much to show.
Right.
And I know Venture Brothers from reputation because they make very short seasons, like it's like 7 or 8 episodes a season or something.
Yeah,
and you know they're Adult Swim shows, they're like 11 minutes long, right? Like they're shortish?
No, they're in the closer to 20 minute.
Okay.
20
minute.
Yeah,
okay.
They're like a typical average, like 22 minutes or whatever it is.
Okay, cool. But
but they do the thing where it's like a year and a half to 2 years between seasons. So yeah. It's been a while.
They take a lot of time in between seasons, and yeah. I know that from reputation. So I know season 6 aired, I believe, earlier this year, like in January-ish.
Maybe. I don't even know.
Might have been last year. But season 6 aired a little while ago. And they basically said that they are almost finished writing season 7. This is series creators Jackson Public and Doc Hammer were on hand. And they said they're almost finished writing season 7. It'll hopefully air around this time next year. But they didn't really commit to anything there. It didn't matter. There wasn't anything in the show. Because these two are a blast to watch. Like they really made me want to watch this show. You know, they're clearly passionate about the work and about the fans. They blame their dedication to quality for the long wait between seasons of the show. They were sarcastic, they were witty, they clearly know their audience very well. Just really, really, really funny. So, very fun panel to end the Adult Swim panel block.
You should definitely check it out. I believe the first two seasons are on Netflix. That's all I've watched so far.
Okay, none more than that? It's just the first two seasons?
I don't think they've added anything yet.
That's pretty weird.
It is. It's also one of those weird things.
It's the same deal with Children's Hospital. We only have the first two seasons on Netflix, and no more than that. So I've only seen the first two seasons of Children's Hospital because of that. But
yeah, it may be a whatever Cartoon Network or / Adult Swim deal. They can only, you know, because I believe they have their own streaming service. Like you could sign up on their website or something.
Do they?
I think so. I'm not sure. Who knows?
Very interesting.
So then you get to experience a little bit of the Venture Brothers, and you get to – this panel ends, and then what's next?
All right. So the last panel for Friday is a panel I went to last year, and I remember coming away thinking last year that it was fine. You know, this is the Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ghost Rider panel and screening. So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., if you're not familiar, is a Marvel TV show. but this year, they bring Ghost Rider into the mix. Ghost Rider is a big part of the show now. And the last year, it was just Marvel TV executive Jeff Loeb and Clark Gregg, the series star. They were on hand, you know, to do like a very brief Q&A, and then they introduced the next episode of the show at the time, which is a pretty middling episode. It was like season 3, episode 3 or something. Right. Season or 2 or whatever. It was a pretty, like, I was pretty lukewarm on. Like, it was fun to watch with a crowd of people who really enjoyed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But it's, you know, it was a pretty fine episode. And, like, I've been pretty lukewarm on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while now. I think last season was mostly pretty bad. and this year, the first two episodes had already aired when this panel started. I had seen them, and I thought they were basically just fine. Like, I wasn't totally sold on the new Ghost Rider, and I wasn't super crazy about what the show was doing. So this year, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had a lot more on hand. Jeff Loeb was there, of course. He's the head of Marvel TV. He always moderates the Marvel TV panels. Right. Clark Gregg was there, naturally, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. star. He plays Phil Coulson. And yeah. This year, Chloe Bennett was there, who plays Sky, and Gabriel Luna, who is the new Ghost Rider, was also there as well. And there was a short Q&A at the beginning in which Luna described the process of becoming Ghost Rider, which is really interesting. You know, he's talking about having this green bandana on his head. And, you know, they were talking about how his performance was there. He was giving it his all, but they were really scared about what it was going to look like on TV, like on their budget, like on their VFX budget. Like, and right. they said they were pretty happy with it. I will say, based on the first episodes, they should work a little harder.
hot take.
Yeah, I mean, episode three doesn't actually have him going Ghost Rider during the episode, so I didn't have any issues with that right. During the screening. And Chloe Bennett described the current season as Sky's like season of rebellion. Clark Gregg mentioned that life model decoys are making an appearance this season, and he implied a connection to Doctor Strange as well, which has been something that this season has been kind of building up to as well. When asked if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will ever connect to Marvel's Netflix series, Jeff Loeb had one thing to say. Stay tuned. So
what?
Which I'm assuming means no, but
yeah,
but we'll see. We'll see what happens. And as a fun surprise, it turned out that Clark Gregg, Chloe Bennett, and Gabriel Luna put together a short video to screen at the panel in which the three of them donned Marvel related cosplay and walked around the show floor in disguise. And the trio were, like, talking to people on the floor who were also in Marvel cosplay about their favorite Marvel shows and characters, and got some pretty funny results. And they revealed themselves to, like, the people they were talking to, and you could see the fans freak out. Like, oh, my God!
That's awesome.
So, like, Marvel is always great at creating, like, fun extra content for the fans. You know, like, the recent Team Thor short comes to mind.
Right.
And this was a pretty great treat for, like, the fans. That could really only happen at Comic-Con. So that was pretty cool. And then finally, we were shown the upcoming third episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s fourth season, which is entitled Uprising. And as someone who has been down on the show for most of last season, I was really impressed with this episode. Like, I really dug it. I won't discuss any story points. The episode airs tomorrow night. But the episode scales back significantly to play out kind of like a superhero version of a John Carpenter thriller. You know, it's
okay.
The episode is about, like, there's this blackout and, A couple members of S.H.I.E.L.D. have to go into the city to infiltrate and, like, rescue one of their own. And they have to do it, like, through, like, old-school technology because none of their electronic technology is working. Right. Really, really cool and effective. The fights in this episode are terrific, and it's just a great action narrative. You know, there's a lot of, like, one-take fights, really well choreographed. The episode's subplots deal with a more human and emotional conflict than the show usually engages in. And hopefully, it's an indication of the series going forward. You know, I've enjoyed the show to varying degrees throughout its run, but it never really found an identity. It always feels like it's kind of morphing to suit the needs of the movies.
Yeah.
Like, even this season's, like, the fallout of the Sokovia Accords, and it's about, like, Inhumans having to register for the Sokovia Accords, which is something that, like, the writers of Civil War didn't even think about. Like, they don't care about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at all. So, yep. So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could just do its own thing. Like, it could be fine. And I don't think anybody would, like, make a big deal about the Inhumans not registering for the Sokovia Accords. But, you know, they always feel like they're kind of catching up with what the movies are doing. And so I'm hoping that this episode indicates what it's going to be like going forward. You know, this is a version of the show that I can really get behind. And so I really enjoyed this episode. I think it's going to surprise some fans, and it's really cool.
There you go. That's exciting. The future, a potential future of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, hopefully.
One of the timelines, maybe.
Right. the non-Snyderverse timeline.
Yeah. So then you go back, you get some sleep for day three begins.
Yeah, and day three was nuts, man, I'm telling you. So day three was Saturday, and in my 3 years of attending New York Comic Con, the holy grail has been the Walking Dead panel, right? Like, that's like...
Right.
That is the...
That's the one.
That's the biggest panel there. Like, it has to be. I remember the first year I was there, I was on the main stage, and it filled up within minutes. Like, I did not get into the Walking Dead panel. Second year, it was moved to Madison Square Garden, allowing for a bigger crowd, and I did not get into that either. So now, for my third year, I basically staked out Madison Square Garden all day.
And, yeah.
Because you basically have to. I was not the only one. There were people there. I would say, of the people waiting in line outside of Madison Square Garden at about 9, 10 a.m., they didn't let us in until 11:30. The people waiting in line around that time, probably three quarters of them were staying all day till The Walking Dead.
So you got there at 9 o'clock, let's say. What time was The Walking Dead panel?
It was supposed to start at 5:30. Ended up starting at 6.
That's insane. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm just gonna complain about this for a second. They wouldn't allow food or drink in Madison Square Garden. While this was going on, which is ridiculous when you're going to be spending all day there.
And were the concession stands and stuff
there
open?
There were concession stands, but the only foods they had to offer were hot dogs, popcorn, and pretzels, and candy.
What?
Like, people are spending all day. You know, you want, like, a meal or something.
And yeah, also, that's pretty insane.
And also, that stuff was super expensive. It was, like, $7 for a hot dog.
Yeah, I mean, it's still Madison Square Garden prices, so I guess you're right.
Yeah, so I ended up spending, like, $16 on, like, a pretzel and M&Ms and a water.
Yeah.
And, like, that was my meal for the day. Like, I felt very cheated out of my food. But
you hear that, Comic-Con executives?
Yeah.
That I know are listening?
Oh, absolutely. You think they wouldn't be listening to this? This is primo
stuff.
They're
they're so obsessed with Shrek 5, they don't even care if we don't talk about it.
I'm just going to keep stringing them along. There were a lot of panels throughout the day that I was, some of them I was pretty excited to see. Because at least one of them is a movie that I really, really want to watch. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Two more of them had people who who I really like. One of them was a really cool panel with a lot of really cool people that I'll talk about in a little bit. In any case, The Walking Dead was the last panel of the day, but I secured my seat very early on. I was in at 11:30. Got a really good seat, not that far away from the stage. And so the first panel of the day was for The Great Wall, which I don't know if you've have you seen the trailers for The Great Wall, Mike?
I have, yes. I've also heard, there's read some articles and stuff about it.
Right, yeah. This is a movie that has caused some controversy when its trailer hit for casting a white leading man in a primarily Asian story.
Right.
Which, so it probably wasn't a coincidence that moderator Dave Carter kind of stressed the film's international cast. Who came out with thunderous applause. Today was actually Matt Damon's birthday. Saturday was Matt Damon's birthday. So Matt Damon, who was the star of The Great Wall, came out, talked to Dave Carter for a little bit, and Dave Carter, led the audience to sing happy birthday to Matt Damon. It was delightful. also on the panel were Jing Tiang, who is an Asian actress who's soon to be seen in a couple of blockbuster movies. She's going to be in Kong, Skull Island, and Pacific Rim 2. And she is, like, the lead female actress of this movie. Pedro Pascal, who was Oberyn Martell in Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And he's also, I believe he's the star of Narcos on Netflix. So that was pretty neat. That was pretty cool. I'm a big fan of Game of Thrones, so a little Oberyn Martell action there.
Yeah,
also,
that's exciting.
Also, this was really interesting and I think showed a cultural divide among some of the audience. Because there was definitely a, when we got there, like, it was this group of people who only spoke, like, Mandarin Chinese.
Okay.
And they were all dressed in, like, cat outfits or whatever. Like, I don't really understand it. But, they were talking about the panel, and they were like, oh, but, they were talking to Matt Damon, and Matt Damon was like, oh, the moderator was talking to Matt Damon, and he was like, yeah, but you're not, like, the biggest star in this movie. And I was like, wait, what? Like, it's Matt Damon. Like, who's a bigger star than Matt Damon? And Matt Damon was like, no, you're right. And he was just, like, kind of laughing about it. And I guess also in this movie is a Wong Jun Kai, who is a massively popular pop star in China, making his film debut here as an actor. And when he walked out, he's probably like 17 years old, something like that. When he walked out, like, certain sections of this crowd went fucking nuts. Like,
yeah, that's the thing that which makes me it seems this is the one instance where the whitewashing claim of casting Matt Damon in an Asian role seems silly, because this is a Chinese movie.
It is.
This is the most expensive Chinese movie ever made.
Yeah.
So they clearly cast Matt Damon to capture the American audience. Otherwise, they wouldn't give a shit about us.
Yeah, exactly. So people went nuts for this guy, this kid. He had to talk through a translator and everything. He didn't really speak English.
Right.
And the director of the movie, Zhang Yimou, was also there. And Zhang Yimou, director of movies like House of the Flying Daggers, among others, like a really great Chinese director. It was only a 30-minute panel, so it was pretty brief. It touched on the use of color in Zhang Yimou's films, the gender equality depicted in this movie. Jing Tian plays this army lieutenant who is basically Matt Damon's equal in every respect, and talked about a lot more. We were shown a highlight reel of Zhang Yimou's films, and we were shown a new trailer for The Great Wall, and it looks fun. It looks solid. I am looking forward to The Great Wall. It looks to be like a pretty fun monster movie.
Right.
Yimou is a good director. I'm pretty optimistic about this one going forward.
Yeah, a treat you weren't expecting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember seeing the controversy surrounding it and like seeing that it was directed by Zhang Yimou, and I'm like, well, you know, I think there's more to this than just... the thing is, I feel like the marketing is a little wrong-headed in that regard. I feel like that's what it is. Because you see the marketing, and it's just a picture of Matt Damon's face. And it's like, Matt Damon, The Great Wall. It's
like... like every Matt Damon movie, the poster is just his face.
Exactly. It sells seats, man. It sells...
Yeah.
It puts butts in seats.
Exactly.
Anyway... So after that was another panel. It was two movies, both from Legendary Pictures, I believe. Legendary Pictures presented two of their big movies that are coming out next year. The first one was Power Rangers, which we've talked about things that we're both big fans of. I am not a fan of Power Rangers.
Okay.
So I am not a big Power Rangers fan. I was trying to come at this with an open mind because, you know, I don't want to, like, write something off without giving it its due diligence. But Power Rangers is dumb, man. Like, Power Rangers is a stupid, stupid show. And people like it because they have, like, 90s nostalgia. It's the same people who are, like, going nuts over Legends of Hidden Temple.
Right.
You know, going nuts for this Power Rangers thing. This panel consisted of director Dean Israelite, who's the director of Project Almanac, and the five cast members who are playing the Power Rangers, which include Digger Montgomery, Naomi Scott, Becky G, Ludie Lin, and RJ Seiler. RJ Seiler is probably the most well-known of these actors. He was Earl in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Okay.
So there's that. So they talked a bit about the process of making the movie, about working with Elizabeth Banks, who plays Rita Repulsa in the movie. They talk about starting to bond as a group of actors, as well as a group of characters on screen. Israelite kind of claimed the film had the characters dealing with quote-unquote real problems while also exploring a quote-unquote mythological odyssey, which recalls a classic Simpsons quote, as many things do for me,
right.
Which is the episode of The Simpsons where they introduce Poochie and they're screen testing things for audiences and they're taking the votes. And it's like, all right, so you want a realistic, down-to-earth show that's completely off the wall and swarming with magic robots.
Yeah.
That was the vibe that I got from this Power Rangers panel. Elizabeth Banks recorded a message for the audience in which she introduced the trailer for the new film, which had actually been published online a few hours beforehand. This was not acknowledged by anyone on stage.
Naturally.
We were shown the trailer twice, and fans in the room seemed to like it, I guess. I am not sold. It looks bad. It looks stupid.
I'm just picturing what a smattering of applause would sound like in Madison Square Garden.
I mean,
and it's the most tragic thing I could imagine.
Like, no, there were people there who seemed like legitimately pumped for Power Rangers, you know, and like they were giving out like promotional posters and people were collecting them and stuff. And so we were shown the trailer twice. It looks bad. It looks like Chronicle meets The Breakfast Club, but not as good as either of those.
That's an awful combination, first off.
It was very awkwardly paced, and, you know, here's the thing. Power Rangers is, like, an inherently goofy premise, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a stupid show.
It's a ripoff of a Japanese cart, like, it's like a whole, yeah.
Right, but if I was a Power Rangers fan, I would want it to be goofy, right? Like I would want like a goofy Power Rangers movie. The only thing dumber than Power Rangers is taking Power Rangers seriously. And
we're proving our theory about what universe we're in.
This is a Snyderverse Power Rangers movie. So it's just a trailer, you know. It doesn't actually show them in the Power Rangers outfits. It's mostly them like building up to them becoming the Power Rangers. It's just a little bit of Elizabeth Banks' Rita Repulsa, which looks also dumb. Like it looks like it looks like it's taking it very seriously, like she's a menacing witch or whatever, but it's like, you know, she's this cackling she demon or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
This is a TV show about magic powers and robots becoming bigger robots, and like
her name is Rita Repulsa.
I know.
Like it literally speaks for itself.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just the trailer. Like, it could be goofier than it lets on. But if I were a Power Rangers fan, like, I'd be worried about this. Yeah. But I'm not a Power Rangers fan. I'm not going to see this movie. So there's that. Like, Power Rangers is dumb. People, like, grow up, people.
Yeah. I remember really liking Power Rangers when I was a child, but now I'm not.
That's the thing. I liked it when I was a kid too. You know, I used to watch Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That was the one that like hit when I was a kid. And I was like, yeah, Power Rangers, whatever. That was when I was like 6. I'm 23 now. you know, and there's stuff from my childhood that I still like and appreciate and like has aged well with time. Power Rangers is not one of those things.
Right.
You know, it's a stupid, stupid show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to the second half of the legendary panel.
Because the second half of the legendary panel delivered like gangbusters. Their next showing was for one of my most anticipated movies of next year. This is John Wick Chapter 2.
Oh, man.
And so John Wick is one of my favorite action movies of this decade. We talked a little bit about it when I talked about the John Wick VR experience. You know, it's a slick thriller that's both modern and retro at the same time. And it brought Keanu Reeves back to stardom in a big way. And I can only appreciate it for that because Keanu Reeves I love. And so this panel began with a giant warning on the screen that said, "Warning, the following panel will contain foul language as well as kick-ass film footage that shows fighting, violence, and lots of guns."
And, oh, my God.
And it was not lying. So, of course, Keanu Reeves was on hand. I got to see Keanu Reeves in person, which is pretty cool. As well as director Chad Stahelski, who was the co-director of the first film, as well as the stunt coordinator for The Matrix. Producer Basil Ewenk, screenwriter Derek Kolstad, and actors Common and Ian McShane. So that was really cool.
What a lineup.
Yeah, it was a blast to hear them talk about what the film has in store, how certain stunts were filmed in this movie. The sequel is going to show us more of the Continental, which is the first film's most intriguing aspect, like this underground society of hitmen.
Right.
It's just a really cool thing to explore. And when asked about the fate of Wick's new dog, which is a genuine concern given the fate of the last one, Kolstad only said, "You guys will see what happens to the dog." And the entire audience is like going, "No!" Like, and he's like, "Don't worry, it's great." So I don't know what that means, but this, like, I'm pretty excited to find out. We were showing a behind-the-scenes reel, which showed off a lot of the stunt work of the new film, and it's kind of interspersed with interviews from the cast and crew. And it was really cool. And then we were shown the first teaser trailer to the movie, which blew the roof off the place. People were going nuts about this trailer. It looks fantastic. Did you watch the trailer? I know it went online like afterwards.
No, I was just about to say this. I may have to break my Unsullied rule for John Wick Chapter 2. I may have to do it.
You might have to. It is fantastic. And it reveals the presence of one Lawrence Fishburne in the movie. Which means, yes, this is a Matrix reunion. Like,
I did see a comment on Reddit on the post about the trailer saying, "What if this is revealed to all have been a training program in the Matrix?"
Now, that would be quite a twist.
Start your fan theories now.
Yeah. So I have full confidence that John Wick Chapter 2 was going to live up to the first film and more. I hope to see this Keanu resurgence yielding kick-ass action movies for years to come. And I just saw a story today that John Wick 3 is already in the works. So,
oh my God.
You know, I'm very excited for the John Wick universe to continue. In an ideal world, a John Wick Jack Reacher crossover should happen, I feel like.
Wow.
Like, that
That's
would be...
too much.
I don't know if I can handle that. Like...
Yeah, I can't even.
Like John Wick v. Jack Reacher. Dawn of Punching or something.
Oh, man.
So that was that was a pretty great panel. That was really fun. I washed the taste of Power Rangers out of my mouth. And then after that, there was the panel for DreamWorks Troll Hunters, which is not something I really had on my radar. It's not something I had heard of. But I was interested in this because it stood at a unique advantage for its place in the schedule. It was the panel right before The Walking Dead, meaning they were guaranteed a packed house.
Right.
So if they could deliver a fun panel, they could win over some fans, generate good word of mouth. So this show was not on my radar before, but I have to say I was pretty impressed with what I saw. For those unfamiliar, Troll Hunters is a new Netflix TV series from DreamWorks Animation, co-created and produced by Guillermo del Toro. So I love...
Say no more.
Yeah, I love Guillermo del Toro. And he was here. It was really cool to just see Guillermo del Toro live talking about his work. And he came out to introduce the show to us and then screened the first two episodes of the series, which he co-directed. And it was his first time directing animation, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
And they were fun. The show looks to be pretty solid. It's a family-friendly adventure series. It's about a 15-year-old boy named Jim who was chosen by a magical amulet to be the troll hunter sworn to protect good trolls from the evil ones. Jim's actually voiced by Anton Yelchin. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was pretty wild. Based on the first two episodes, the show seems to have a very strong sense of storytelling and character, and it has a really expansive mythology that would be really cool to explore over the course of its season, which is 26 episodes, all of which are dropping on Netflix on December 23rd. Wow. And they didn't really mention the future of the series. I'm not really sure if they're planning on doing more. If they are, I don't know what they're going to do about Anton Yelchin.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. But after the episode screened, Del Toro came back out, along with co-creator Rodrigo Blas, producer Mark Guggenheim, who is known for shows like Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. And actually, he was also the screenwriter of Green Lantern. And there was one moment in the show that reminded me of Green Lantern, and I was scared for a second, but like the show bounced back.
But oh, that's good.
There's a point in the show where the amulet gives Jim like this magical suit of armor. That he uses it to like power up into the suit, a lot like how the ring that Hal Jordan wears like powers him into the Green Lantern suit. And there's a scene in the show where he's like trying to show his friend for the first time the suit, and it plays exactly like the scene in Green Lantern. And it's like, oh man, what are we in for? But yeah. it gets better from there. And then cast members Kelsey Grammer, Charlie Saxton, Steven Yeun, who'll be coming out again for the Walking Dead panel, and Ron Effin Perlman.
That's his legal name, by the way.
Yeah. we're there. They delivered a very fun panel. Perlman told a story about having a handwritten letter from Guillermo del Toro from 1990 begging him to be in Kronos, which was fantastic. We were informed that the original troll hunter in the first episode is voiced by none other than Tom Hiddleston. And in later episodes, it's voiced by James Purefoy. Del Toro himself plays the dentist character, which was pretty funny. And the theme of the show was composed by Alexandre Desplat, great composer. The panel ended with Ron Perlman leaving the stage, pretending to be overcome with emotion, only to return with a birthday cake for Del Toro, because it was his birthday the next day. And so for the second time that day, the audience in Madison Square Garden sang happy birthday to a celebrity.
That's very exciting. So that sounds like they had a successful panel, considering it was a thing that I hadn't heard of.
It was cool, and I don't know if I'll end up watching it. It is a kid's show, I would enjoy watching it. I think if I feel like it would be a good, like, I remember you were talking about watching Voltron on like a sick day, and like I feel like it would be a good like sick day like kind of show just to have on. It's a lot of fun. It's a cool like action adventure series. I was into it. It was fun.
It's exactly what Voltron was. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Did you ever finish Voltron by any chance?
I did. Yeah.
You did? How was it?
Finished. Watched all 11 episodes. It was great. It was pretty good.
Okay.
For being a cartoon, it looks beautiful. Like I had said the last time we talked about it, because it's about a studio that did Avatar.
Right.
Ends on a really crazy cliffhanger, which. They have talked about season two, I think. I don't remember if they were at – it was, I think, before Comic-Con they talked about it.
Well, they were at – they had a big panel at Comic-Con on the main stage.
Oh, then that must have been it, actually.
So I think it was a season two sneak peek, actually.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'll keep watching it when season two comes out because it's fun. And why not?
There you go.
And Steven Yeun is in that, I believe.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Steven Yeun, all over the place, voice acting.
Yeah, hopefully he's got a cool, promising career as a voice actor as well. Because that's hopefully exciting.
Yeah, once he gets killed off in The Walking Dead, we'll see what happens.
For real, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, the big one was The Walking Dead, of course, and that was the next panel, the final panel. The build-up to that was insane. Like, it was, props to the DJ, I forget the guy, the MC and the DJ, but for a lot of these main state, like big Comic-Con venues, like Hammerstein Ballroom, Madison Square Garden, the main stage, they have a DJ and an MC kind of getting the crowd pumped for panels in between things right. happening. So they play games with the crowd, or they play music and stuff. So props to those guys, because they kept the crowd energized throughout the entire day.
That's a hard job.
Yeah, people who were there since like 10 a.m. That was really cool. And the build up to this Walking Dead panel was insane. They showed like a very lengthy recap of season 6 of The Walking Dead, leading up to the big Negan scene, the big controversial Negan scene that ended on the cliffhanger. And then they showed what I can only imagine is every single promo that has been out there for season 7. we must have went through like 15 or 20 commercials. Like, it was insane.
Oh my god.
And then after that, there was still time. Like, it was, the panel started like a half hour late. There was still time to kill, and so the MC and the DJ just started like leading the crowd in like these big like sing-along dance contests. There's a bit where they started playing Don't Stop Believin' and had the entire crowd like waving their cell phones in the air and singing along, and it was a lot of fun. It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
But in any case, the Walking Dead panel finally started. It was the big one. Walking Dead took the stage in New York Comic Con, and fans went nuts. And so I was really curious to see how this panel was going to go, because the Walking Dead is coming off of a very controversial season finale. So basically, if you're not familiar, after finally introducing Jeffrey Dean Morgan's Negan in the episode's final scene, it cut to credits without revealing who it was that Negan killed in that scene.
Okay.
So you don't watch The Walking Dead, right, Mike?
No, I actually just started back up where I had stopped watching it.
Did in you
season
really?
2. Yeah, because we're closing in on Halloween, and you know we're in that time of like I want to watch scary things, or you know at least creepy stuff. So I said, you know what, I'm gonna give it a try, because I stopped watching it because it was 8 episodes of nothing happening.
Yeah,
in the first half.
Yeah, you gave up. I mean, season 2, from what I remember, it gets better in the second half.
And I was just going to say, immediately, the like second, like I watched, I think, 3 episodes, like 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
And was already light years ahead of what I remembered thinking of
yeah.
Walking Dead.
You're in a pretty good period of the show, because season 2 gets better in the second half, and then season 3 is really strong for the most part. It's a little uneven towards the end, but it's pretty strong. And then season 4 is really uneven. And season 5 is really good. I think season 5 is its best. And then season 6 is a step down, but it's like mostly solid until the finale. But here's the thing. I felt that the finale was a narrative cheat at the time.
Okay.
And make no mistake, it was a narrative cheat. You know, they should have revealed who Negan killed. Like, it should have been the final note of that episode. But it has turned into a pretty effective marketing hook for the show.
Oh, well, then why else did you think they did it?
Well, yeah. No, I guess that was the entire point. But, like, it worked. Like, people want to know who died, especially in the people, especially the people in the theater tonight. Especially, not tonight. I'm reading,
Saturday.
Yeah, I'm reading my old, my write-ups for the things. The people who were in that theater on Saturday. So this panel was moderated, of course, by Talking Dead host / professional nerd Chris Hardwick.
Right.
And that it was probably the most populated Comic-Con panel I've ever seen in terms of people who were on stage. I mean, most of the cast and key crew members were there. Robert Kirkman was there. Showrunner Scott Gimple was there. Producer Gail Ann Hurd. Greg Nicotero was there. I was very excited to see him. He is the visual effects artist of The Walking Dead. And he's become a very chief creative voice on the show. Over the past few years, he's directed a lot of episodes. He directs like pretty much every premiere and finale now. But he's been a makeup and visual effects artist in Hollywood for years. He did I believe he worked on Army of Darkness.
Wow.
And you know, he did the head blowing up effects for The Hateful Eight, and he gets like top billing in Hateful Eight when you see it. Like, it's written and directed by Quentin Tarantino, and the next one is like makeup and visual effects by Rick Nicotero.
Right. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
So he's like, he's just a really cool guy, and I was just really cool to see him like as a film geek. I was like, it's Greg Nicotero. then actor, in terms of actors, there was Steven Yeun, who plays Glenn, Lauren Cohen, who plays Maggie, Norman Reedus, who plays Daryl, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who is of course Negan, Melissa McBride, who plays Carol, Danai Gurira, who plays Michonne, Michael Kudlitz, who plays Abraham, Lenny James, who plays Morgan, Sonico Martin Green, who plays Sasha, Alana Masterson, who plays Tara, Austin Nichols, who plays Spencer, And Seth Gilliam, who plays Gabriel. Andrew Lincoln was not there. I was very surprised about that.
Interesting.
Yeah, and actually Seth Gilliam, who plays Gabriel, was stuck in traffic and showed up mid-panel.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was a weird, like, the second time that happened that weekend for me. That's very odd. We were shown a clip at the beginning from the upcoming AMC special about The Walking Dead and its journey from season one to now, and it is remarkable how different everyone looks in just, like, a six-year span, especially Carl.
Yeah,
I mean, that would make sense. I've said before that I measure the passage of time by how much taller Carl is in between seasons.
Yep.
Because every year, it's like Carl just jumps up like a foot. But yeah, so Andrew Lincoln was surprisingly absent, which resulted in a pretty funny bit in which Norman Reedus, Stephen Yeun, and Michael Kudlitz all had letters from him to read to the audience. So that was pretty entertaining. Most of the panel consisted of Chris Hardwick going from one panelist to the next, just asking them about their characters and where they're at this season. I guess of most interest here would be Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who is Negan, is still kind of an unknown quantity. Because, again, he was only in that one scene at the very end of season six. And I feel like I'm listing off characters that you have no idea who they are because you're only in season two.
I mean, it's impossible to not know stuff about The Walking Dead.
Right, and that's also true. And Negan has been like they've been building up Negan forever on the show. Yeah. Like they've been mentioning him since I think the end of season five. And they finally like introduced him at the end of last year. And you know, so he's only in that one scene, but Morgan has said that from Negan's point of view, he's not the bad guy. Right, like he's essentially the same as Rick, just on opposite sides. He's like a little bit of a showman, a little bit cocky, which you get in that scene. And Rick's group have killed a lot of his guys.
Right.
So, you know, his actions, when looked at through that lens, it kind of makes sense. And, you know, Scott Gimple has mentioned that, like, though he can't swear as much as he does in the comics, they will be surgically capturing the F-bombs that matter. And so that's something. And, yes, we are going to find out who Negan killed in the season premiere. So I wouldn't put it past The Walking Dead to, like, not reveal it until, like...
Until the middle of the season.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the mid-season finale or something, which would piss a lot of people off, too.
Yeah.
So it was a surprisingly emotional panel as well. Melissa McBride was brought to tears at the rapturous reception she received from fans. Lauren Cohen also became overwhelmed when it was mentioned that the show will have aired 99 episodes by season's end.
Wow.
Then episode 100 will be the eighth season premiere. So that's pretty cool, pretty exciting. And then other points of interest include Lenny James, who said that those hoping that Morgan will return to killing should be careful what you wish for. And when asked what other character on the show the actors would like to play, most of them joked and said the baby Judith. Which was
That's
fair.
Amazing.
And also, Chris Hardwick does a tremendous impression of Eugene, the actor who plays Eugene, Josh McDermott, was not at the panel, which I fear may mean that he is the one who dies, but we'll see.
Right.
That's the thing. I feel like if you know
that... It's Glenn. No.
That's the thing. I've actually thought about this a lot. Right, because
wow, okay.
I should have actually written out like my thought process here, but I don't think it can be Glenn, right? Because Glenn was like they pretended to kill off Glenn earlier in the season, like that was the thing. Like they had Glenn appear like he died and then disappeared for like five episodes and then came back as if nothing happened. And it was like a troll to the audience. And I almost defended The Walking Dead in that time. I was like, you know, whatever, like it's trying to tell its own story and, you know, don't like it's clear that Glenn's not dead. Like it was very clear to me that Glenn was not dead because The Walking Dead is a show where if you don't see a character die, they likely don't, you know?
Right.
Like they show their deaths on screen because they can. And so I don't think it'll be Glenn because I don't think they can kill him and not experience fan vitriol after what they pulled last season with Glenn. So I don't think that can happen. And there are characters who I think are safe as well. Like I think Rick is safe, Carl is safe, Michonne and Daryl probably safe as well. And there are characters there who, if they died, would mean nothing. Like Rosita, I think, is there. And Noah, what's his name? Random villager who sometimes shows up once in a while is also there. And so killing them would mean nothing. And so I don't think those deaths would mean anything. So I've narrowed it down to either Abraham, Eugene, or Maggie. Or Sasha, I suppose. But I feel like of those, I think Abraham is probably the likeliest. I think Abraham could be the one to die. But since Eugene wasn't at this panel, the actor who plays Eugene wasn't at this panel, it could be him. It very much could be him. But of the in terms of dramatic effect, I think Abraham's death would affect the most people because he has a plot with Rosita and he has a plot with Sasha. He has romantic entanglements with both of them. And so I feel like both of them would be affected by his death in some way. Maggie would probably hit the hardest with fans, as well, and it would also hit the hardest with a lot of the group, especially Glenn. But I don't know. I feel like they won't kill Maggie. Like I feel like she's too popular of a character at this point to just kill her off as a marketing hook. You know, like
that's pretty high profile for something like that.
That's the thing. I feel like a marketing hook death, which I'm not a fan of, but if they're gonna do it, they have to do it right. It has to be somebody who's big enough that people will care, but not so big that they get pissed off. And I feel like Abraham or Eugene are right in that,
sweet spot.
Right in that sweet spot. So it's going to be one of them, I feel like. So that's my analysis.
Well, I'll let you know how many episodes I make it. I'm not sure if I'm going to try to catch up in anything. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of shit. That's a lot of episodes.
There's a lot of episodes. But it'd be fun if you caught up. You know, it's a really fun show to complain about. Just partially why I keep watching. I mean, it's a show that is occasionally great. Like I really do think The Walking Dead is sometimes a great show. It's often a very frustrating show, but when it's great, like it's like nothing else, I think. So I keep watching it for that reason. So I was curious if we were going to be shown anything, you know, because.
Right.
You know, considering how much they're trying to keep things under wraps about who dies. And here's the thing. There's a subplot going on in the finale where Carol and Morgan are off doing their own thing. So they're not present in the Negan scene. So they're safe. So I was curious to see, like, maybe they would show a clip of, like, Carol and Morgan doing some bullshit. Like, I don't know. But no. Instead, they actually showed a clip from the season premiere, which appears to pick up right after Negan has killed whoever he has killed. And it's like a confrontation scene between Negan and Rick. And it was really good. Like, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is so much fun to watch as this character. He's really, like, fun and menacing at the same time. And it does not reveal who Negan kills, though it implies several possibilities. And I think the clip is online now. So he's, like, talking to Rick about, like, oh, man, you that guy over there, he's my right-hand man. You need a right-hand man, don't you, Rick? Or did I just bash his head in? So it's like implying that it could be somebody very important to Rick. I don't know. And that also implies to me that it might be Abraham, or it could be Daryl. Who knows? It won't be Daryl.
Who knows? It's Daryl.
Oh my god!
That'd be the death of the show.
That would be like the entire show would be canceled like mid-season if that happens. Like those episodes wouldn't air. But it was a great scene. And while I was ambivalent about the season's end last year, I'm hopefully they can bounce back and make something good out of it. So there was that. And that is the end of the Walking Dead panel. That was the end of my longest day.
That concludes day three.
Day three is done.
So you come back for day four. You got to be like half dead at this point.
I am exhausted at this point. Yeah, especially because I stayed up until like 1 a.m. to watch Saturday Night Live. Lin-Manuel Miranda was the host. And one of the panels that I went to this day was a Saturday Night Live head writers panel. And I figured, you know, they'll probably talk about the episode, which they did. So I was glad I watched it.
All right.
But I'll talk about that in a little bit. This is the fourth final day of Comic-Con. It was usually the Sunday's a quieter day, I felt like it was just as packed as ever. I feel like
I feel like they can't afford to have a quiet day anymore.
These Comic-Cons. At this point, like Thursday is, I guess, a little the quieter day because that's like, you know, people are working and stuff. But even on this day, this was like an overcast, rainy day in New York, and people were still like dressed up in their cosplays and just walking through the rain and stuff, and I was like, oh, good for you guys. So I saw two very good panels to close out the con this year. One focused on a very exciting new show called Timeless, I'm assuming you haven't seen Timeless yet, Mike?
No, I've heard of it, though. I've seen commercials for it, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah, so if you haven't been watching Timeless, fix that right away. This show is really, really good. I watched the pilot episode that aired last week, and this series centers around a trio of time travelers, a pilot, a soldier, and a historian, going to different time periods to stop a villain trying to change history. It's kind of like, think Legends of Tomorrow, but with a stronger grasp on character and plotting and overall storytelling.
Shots fired.
Think Legends of Tomorrow, but good. I actually do want to catch up on Legends of Tomorrow at some point. I ditched it like halfway through because I was not into it. But I heard it got better towards the end, so we'll see. The first episode aired last week, and I thought it suffered a little bit from having to kind of juggle setting up the show's unique concept along with delivering a typical episode of the show. Right. So we were shown the second episode, which airs today, October 10th. And I gotta say, this episode brings the time-traveling heroes to April 14th, 1865, the day that Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. And right away, I was kind of taken with how sharp this show seemed. The characters are very well realized. It explores interesting facets of history. You know, its ongoing story is just as good as this time travel week stuff. It's a series to keep an eye on, and I really feel like it's only going to get better. The first episode shows them going to the Hindenburg. And,
interesting.
Yeah, you know, to compare it to Legends of Tomorrow. Legends of Tomorrow takes those characters back to, like, a certain era. So, like, they'll go to the 70s, they'll go to the 80s, but they're not going to, like, historical events. This show is, like, specifically going to historical events, pretty much.
Right.
And so, after the episode, creator Eric Kripke, who's the creator of Supernatural, he co-created the show with Sean Ryan, who's the creator of The Shield, as well as Terriers and a bunch of other shows that got canceled. actors of the show, Abigail Spencer, Matt Lanter, Malcolm Barrett, and Goran Vizhnyak. I want to say his last name is pronounced as.
Sure. We'll go with that.
They came out and they discussed the future of the series, such as other time periods the show is going to go to. Episode 3, we'll see the group meeting the Rat Pack in Las Vegas. And subsequent episodes are going to have Germany in World War II, the Alamo, the Watergate scandal, the French and Indian War, the space race, and Bonnie and Clyde. Those are just what they've mentioned. The experience of shooting the Alamo episode seemed to be the favorite among the actors. They said they recreated the Alamo in an empty Vancouver parking lot. Which is, you know, a fun image to have.
Yeah.
You know, just have, like, people in Vancouver in an empty parking lot in, like, the leathers and the furs of the Alamo. So Kripke also mentioned that he doesn't want a lingering mystery on the show, that he's a fan of, like, economical storytelling. There's a mysterious organization that's introduced in the first episode called Rittenhouse, and we're going to know who they are by episode 6. You know, we're gonna know more about them by episode 9. He said he doesn't believe in endless questions, and he would rather use the answers to those questions to create more stories that create questions that he can then answer. So I am a little disappointed that the series will apparently not be traveling any earlier than the 1700s for now. I feel like there's so much more. I mean, that might be a budgetary thing. I don't really know. But I am very eager to see what they have in store at this point. Timeless is quickly becoming one of the bright spots of the fall TV season, I think. So definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen Timeless yet. It's a cool show.
Yeah, I'll have to keep it up.
Yeah.
All right, so then you finish Timeless and you move on to, I assume, what could only be the best experience you ever had in your whole life. Knowing who you are.
Right. So this is the last panel I went to at Comic-Con, and this was really, really cool. I'm a huge comedy geek. Big fan of Saturday Night Live, and this show is so fascinating to me because it's so unique. You know, there's no other entertainment institution that works quite like Saturday Night Live, so I'm always interested to see how the show gets made and hear about some behind-the-scenes perspective, and that's exactly what this panel delivered, as Vulture's Jesse David Fox moderated a panel with current head writers of the show, Brian Tucker, Sarah Schneider, and Chris Kelly. So much of the panel is focused on the most recent episode hosted by Lin-Manuel Miranda, which aired the night before this panel, with musical guest 21 Pilots. Tucker, Schneider, and Kelly, they went into detail about how sketches are written throughout the week, you know, and how they're often changed and rewritten at the last minute. And, like, perfect example. Did you watch Saturday Night Live this week, Mike?
No, I didn't get a chance to check it out.
Well, it opened, the cold open started with a vice presidential debate sketch.
Right.
Which, you know, and I think people were expecting a little more than that. So it was actually a really good bait and switch. It started with a line that said, like, the following is a rebroadcast of the vice presidential debate from Tuesday. And, you know, the vice presidential candidates come out, and Melissa Villaseñor, who's one of the new cast members, she played the moderator. She had a really funny line about how, you know, she's the one of these shows only Hispanic cast members in its history playing an Asian moderator. Because baby steps.
That's amazing.
It's a good fourth wall break there. And, you know, they talked about they did the panel for a bit, and then they had Mike Pence in the vice presidential debate saying that he stands by, like, everything Donald Trump has ever said, that he does not hate women or anything like that. And then it cuts to breaking news of the Trump leaked audio tape that came out on Friday.
Right.
And they wrote an entire sketch that Alec Baldwin showed up as Trump, and you know, that, like, that's insane because it happened Friday night, right? Like, it was a Friday, like, 5 p.m. or something that broke.
Yeah.
So they had a little over 24 hours to rewrite that entire sketch, you know? And so they were talking about how they, like, when it, like, it became big news Friday, so that sketch was being rewritten, like, Friday night into Saturday morning. And they were saying, like, with the rise of shows like The Daily Show and Full Frontal and stuff like that, SNL is kind of often the last show to be able to make jokes on topical subjects at this point. So right. When something happens so soon to the show, it's really cool to be the first one to be able to talk about it for them. So they discussed the process of writing jokes for the show and the difficulties of writing original material in the age of Twitter. And people have accused SNL of, like, stealing jokes from Twitter in the past, and that's not necessarily the case. It's just that, Chris Kelly was saying, you know, he's always on Twitter trying to see if people have already written jokes that are too similar to the ones that they're writing. When every single person on social media is making Trump jokes, there's going to be overlap. The best they can do is write their own and hope there's not. So one aspect of the panel that was over too quickly regarded the show's treatment of Donald Trump in the wake of his hosting the show last year. Having Trump host has been a shadow that the show is still trying to overcome. It was a subject of a lot of criticism at the time and inspired protests outside 30 Rock, and to editorialize it, it was not a good episode. It was bad.
I don't even remember that.
You don't remember that happening?
No, which is insane.
What?
I don't know how I don't know that.
That was a huge controversial thing. I'm surprised you don't remember that.
But
basically, the series has been a lot harder on Trump this year, I feel like, than last. You know, they brought Alec Baldwin in for a pretty spot-on impression that tends to highlight his flaws, whereas before they had Daryl Hammond doing Trump. And Daryl Hammond, I think, is a phenomenal Trump. He used to do Donald Trump back when he was a cast member, which was like the mid-90s to the 2000s. But that was back when Donald Trump was like the apprentice guy. Like he was, like not the horrifying presidential candidate that he is now.
He wasn't a villain yet.
Yeah, he wasn't, you know,
As much of a villain.
Yeah, he wasn't the James Bond-esque villain we know today. So the Hammond impression was still good. I liked it a lot last year, but it was also kind of lacking, I guess, in a certain way. Like he's doing, like his impression of Trump is the reality show Trump, like the apprentice Trump.
Right.
And it's not presidential candidate, you know, everybody except white men are the worst Trump.
Right.
Trump.
Yeah.
And so they brought Alec Baldwin in this year. And, you know, when asked, Jesse David Fox brought up an interesting question to the writers, which they asked whether Trump hosting had played a part in normalizing him to America in any kind of part. Because that's an accusation that SNL has had in the past, because – you know, they let Trump host. They gave him a platform, like 90 minutes of free advertising.
Right.
And so Tucker kind of deflected the question, saying that the media had already normalized Trump at that point. He doesn't think SNL put him over the edge. I think it would have been really interesting to hear more about what was going on behind the scenes during the Trump episode, because I'm fascinated with how people on the show were reacting to it. Because, like, it seemed like it was partially a network-mandated move, partially maybe Lorne Michaels put him up to it, because it was a ratings kind of grab. So I suppose they may not be able to talk that much about it, you know, the cast and the crew.
There was another thing to just tangentially talk about it. When NBC took the longest to actually report on the Trump tapes that came out,
right,
because they were afraid of their connection to Donald Trump already.
Right. And the thing is, the Trump tapes that came out were from NBC. Like, it was an access.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. That's...
Because they were holding on to them for so long.
Yeah,
like, because they were afraid he would sue them.
Right, so that's nuts. And then Washington Post ended up scooping the Trump tapes from them, like leaking them to the public. And it's like NBC like is trying to call themselves a news network, but they had this just sitting on, like they were just sitting on this for like days. And they said there was something kind of like legal ramifications they didn't know, but at the same time, like this is mic'd audio. It's not like he was in a private place, you know.
Yeah.
So it's. NBC's in a really rough place right now with in regards to normalizing Donald Trump, because, I mean, there was the whole Jimmy Fallon thing a couple weeks ago as well, where Trump was a guest on the show and Jimmy Fallon was, like, tussling his hair and, like, people responded poorly to that. Actually, Jimmy Fallon showed up on SNL this past weekend doing a bit on Weekend Update with Tina Fey. And,
I'd heard about that.
And they were, like, playing undecided voters from, like, Pennsylvania and... Tina Fey made fun of him, like, oh, you love Trump. And she was like, oh, you're always talking about how his hair is real. And she, like, tussles Jimmy Fallon's hair. It's, like, a snide thing. Which felt like it could have been a pretty funny bit if it was just Tina Fey.
Yeah.
I felt like Jimmy Fallon was trying to, like, regain some goodwill almost, you know. But again, SNL had Trump host last season, so it doesn't have that much goodwill to give. It's still in a very precarious place. And, like, I love SNL. I love this show. I love everything about this show. That was a really wrong-headed decision to have him host. And so it was just really kind of cringe-inducing. Plus, Jimmy Fallon was breaking the entire time, as he always does. So I felt like he was, like, laughing and kind of – like, he just seemed kind of out of it. I feel like that
– yeah, that seems like a nervous laughter more than anything. Of, like, I helped normalize a monster. Oh, this is funny.
Yeah, and actually, there's a lot of while I was at Comic-Con, there's a lot of anti-Trump sentiment. When I was at the Great Wall panel, it was Matt Damon's birthday, and he was saying, oh, my dad just texted me. And he said, happy birthday, Matt. As a birthday present, in 30 years, in 30 days, our country will not have elected a monster. or something along those lines. And then at the Venture Brothers panel, somebody actually asked about Donald Trump being in the background of the scene in an episode that they had done like 2 years ago. Because there's a scene in like an episode where there's a party with like all of New York's elite, all the wealthiest people in New York, and Donald Trump's in like the background of an episode. And they were in Korea like doing the animation for it at the time that like Donald Trump was like starting to rise and like becoming a person. So they didn't even like know about anything that was happening with Donald Trump.
Oh my God.
And so they came back and like realized what was going on. They wanted to take him out of the episode, but they were like, it was too late. But they were like pleading with people, like, just don't vote for Trump, please. Like that was like,
perfect.
Yeah. But anyway, the SNL panel was a great panel, for anyone looking to get into comedy too. Like the writers worked their way up to SNL by previously working on such varied platforms like Chappelle's Show, College Humor Videos, The Onion News Network. Actually, Chris Kelly, who, used to work for the Onion News Network. They mentioned Jesse David Fox, who was the moderator, mentioned this in the panel. It wasn't Jesse David Fox. Brian Tucker mentioned to Chris Kelly that when they hired him to be a writer on SNL, one of the things that they thought was funniest was a video that I love, that I remember from a few years ago, which was I think I talked about this in our Fast and Furious review as well. Chris Kelly actually wrote an Onion News piece where it was like an interview with the writer of Fast Five, and it was like the 6-year-old kid who's like talking, and it's like, oh yeah, the cars go fast, and they go boom, and they go psh, and like,
yep.
And I remember when that came out and just loving it and watching it a lot. Like, I thought that was hilarious. And so I was like, he mentioned that was like Chris Kelly's thing. I was like, oh my God, like, that's so cool. They were asked about who their favorite hosts were. The answers included like Channing Tatum, The Rock, Christoph Waltz, Larry David. What was really funny, there was a brief audience Q&A, and a little kid came up, it was like 8-year-old kid, and came up and was like, what was the worst sketch you ever wrote that made it to air? And Tucker mentioned something like a private investigator Al Sharpton thing with Kenan that I vaguely remember from a couple years ago, and I do remember that kind of bombing. And then Schneider and Kelly, who co-write their sketches together, both answered the Robert Durst at an improv show sketch from a couple years ago, which I remember very distinctly because that was pretty lousy. So that's really, and it was funny to hear like the story behind that sketch because they had written a longer thing. It was like a 6 or 7 minute sketch that they had to cut down for time purposes, and in doing so had to cut out a lot of the funniest jokes and the funniest moments. Right. And so at a certain point it was like a 3-minute sketch, and they had to choose between like a 3-minute sketch and a 4-minute sketch to fill in the spot. And then having to go with the 3-minute sketch for timing wise. And they were like, no, please, no, this isn't good anymore. Like, stop this.
That's perfect.
But yeah, like, it's interesting to hear, like, you know, sometimes like they try to make every sketch as funny as they possibly can, but a lot of time, what gets put on air, what makes it to air is the stuff that just happens to work out timing wise, you know?
Right.
Cause a 90-minute show, it's all very tightly, paced, and you know, it's a lot of times like you need to figure it out how it's going to work in terms of like where a cast member is going to be in a certain spot, how like costume changes are going to happen, like all that kind of stuff. There's so much plates spinning on Saturday Night Live, which is why I think it's a really fascinating show. Just like just see the behind the scenes of like it's really a really cool show.
Yeah.
So now that I've sold you on Saturday Night Live,
I'm sure let's do we'll do a whole half hour more on just this panel bike.
But that was it. That was the final panel of the day. I was finally officially done. I went home. Ends up staying up to watch the debate, so I was exhausted by this morning because I had to work today, so I had to wake up at 4 a.m. again. Long weekend, but it was a blast. Had a good time.
Yeah, sounds like you saw a lot of really awesome things. Yeah. I'm jealous I couldn't be there again, as always.
Yes. I mean, you were sort of there last year. You got, like, scalped a ticket.
A little bit. Yeah. Although that's impossible now.
Yeah, so. They made scalping tickets a lot harder. Although I saw people still, selling tickets out on the street, so I don't know how that would work with the new system. I don't know if they were just cheating people or whatever, but...
probably.
That's probably the case. But, yeah, in any case, really delightful time. I would say probably the SNL panel might have been my favorite.
Oh, what a surprise.
it was a really cool panel. All of the John Wick 2 panel was also pretty fucking fantastic. So that was also a highlight of the con.
I think that as soon as we're done here, I'm going to go watch the John Wick 2 trailer.
Oh, you absolutely should.
I can't not. But I think that wraps it up for our Comic-Con episode of Film Bookcast.
Yes, I believe it does. Do you remember the things that I say at the end of podcast episodes, Mike? Or you...
No, I think we'd have to turn it over to you because you're the one with the copy.
Well, I don't have the copy open right now, but you can
find it. Oh, well, that's tragic. Well, while you're opening that, you could join us next week where we're going to be doing The Complete Works, where we're going to be reviewing Nicolas Cage in Michael Bay's masterpiece, The Rock.
That is going to be amazing. Very excited about that. And then, yeah, after that, 2 weeks from now, our film bookcast episode is going to be Jack Reacher, right? Never Go Back.
I believe so, yeah.
Jack Reacher, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
Never Stop, Never Stopping, John Wick 3 verse something.
Yep.
I'm excited for Jack Reacher. I really liked the first one.
Yeah, the first one's really good. I'm very excited about number 2. And, you know, once we have the Reacher Wick cinematic universe going.
It'll be John Wick versus Jack Reacher, Reacher versus Freddy versus Jason.
Yep. Versus Ash versus Evil Dead.
Yes, done. Sign me up.
That team fighting Deadites. I'm in. I am in like Flynn.
Yep.
Anyway, I didn't open the copy because it would take too long. So I'm going to try to do this from memory. Where can we find you online this week, Mike?
Oh, that's right. Mike DiCrescio. Wait, what? That's the first time I've ever done this, Mike. Help. You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. If you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all my podcasts at filmbook.com. Thank you for listening to Film Bookcast of New York Comic Con. We really appreciate it. If you want to send us an email at podcast@filmbook.com, you can do that. Please specify the podcast that you're talking about in your email, because we've produced so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. If you want to subscribe to Filmbook's Patreon campaign, you can do that at patreon.com/filmbook. And I think that's all the things. I think I did that from memory. That's pretty good. It's not exactly verbatim, word for word, but like I got the points out, and that's what's important. So yeah,
I love that you did nail the inflection, and we would love to hear from you. I was very proud of you, Mike.
It's always sincere.
That's right. Not rote memory.
And yeah, anyway, yeah. Next week, The Rock. 2 weeks from now, Jack Reacher, Never Go Back. Very excited about both of those. All right. You want to take us out, Mike?
Thanks so much for listening, and we are out.
Good job.